A new problem with which now we are dealing with is related to the transmission of the signal. At now, many of us can think that a signal acquired by a transducer can be transmitted through a Wi-Fi connection to a certain point into which a microprocessor will elaborate it. This is an ideal situation because in many industrial applications, processes are merged into a very disturbed environment. For example, it is possible that in the surroundings we have magnetic fields or points, electronic circuits that are supplied, and these devices will irradiate in the surrounding environment electric fields that can disturb the transmission of the signal, in particular if this transmission is Wi-Fi. This means that many critical applications cannot be done in such a way because otherwise we could run the risk that the transmission is interrupted and, for example, the control exerted by a microprocessor on a specific process is lost. And clearly, this is not acceptable. For this reason, in many industrial applications, if not all, still now we transmit the signal acquired by a sensor through cables and wires, but the noise will affect even them. We have two possible sources of disturbances. They are called electrostatic or electromagnetic. In the first case, we have to imagine that a capacitive coupling between the wire that brings the signal and a possible noise source present in the environment, for example, when this wire is close to other one with the 50 Hz voltage. This is the typical situation. Okay, we have two circuits, two electronic, let's say, devices that are supplied and that interact reciprocally, one with respect to the other. That is, the electric field caused by the wire will induce a certain distribution of charge in the other device close to it, and vice versa. We can say that this effect could be considered equivalent to a parallel noise. That is, in both the parts, in both the electronic areas, a charge distribution takes origin. Concerning instead the electromagnetic source of noise, we have to imagine that a possible electronic device that is power supplied induces a current into the wire that brings the signal, and this current will overlap to the existing one. In other words, we have two voltages now. The first one is due to the signal acquired by the transducer. The second one is due to the effect relative to the induction of the cable of the voltage source close to the wire that we are considering. In slide 21, these two effects are presented with two different pictures that, however, are both drawn in dotted lines. The first one is a capacitor and is called Vn. The second one is a current represented by a solenoidal circuit and is called In. The scenario instead is represented by the continuous wire connected connecting the transducer with the computer, with the microprocessor. We can imagine some methods for limiting such a kind of effect. For example, if the output impedance of the transducer is low, most of the electrostatic effect can be considered absorbed due to the fact that the charge injected into the wire by the other electronic circuit close to it will discharge to the ground through the internal impedance, output impedance of the transducer. On the other hand, the electromagnetic disturbance can be limited if we have a good signal-to-noise ratio. That is, if the amplitude of the signal that is provided by the transducer is much higher than the noise due to the induction effect. Sometimes this requires the presence of a preamplifier in the transducing stage. Another possibility is shown in the slide 22, into which we see that before connecting the wire to the analog to digital conversion and then to the microprocessor, we insert into the circuit a differential stage, that is an operational amplifier that works as a differential device. This operational amplifier performs the subtraction between the original signal that is amplified close to the transducer, you see that small triangle very close to the T block, subtracts this signal affected by the noise Vn from another signal that is given by a wire with no output coming from the transducer, but very close to the first wire, so as to collect the same approximately noise. If the difference is done in the correct way, that is, if the differential amplifier could be considered ideal, the difference between its own inputs allows us to have a signal plus noise to which the noise is subtracted. So, in the ideal conditions, the output of the differential stage will be only the signal provided by the transducer and measuring the physical phenomenon that we want to acquire. In real life, this is not completely true. In other words, we don't have ideal differential amplifiers. We have amplifiers that feature a very high common mode reaction ratio. The CMRR is a parameter that measures the capability of a differential amplifier, generally speaking of whatever amplifier, to amplify the difference between its own input signals and to cancel, to eliminate the common mode, that is the common signal that is present at its own input themselves. In our specific case, the common mode, the common signal, is represented by the noise that will be present on both the wires that are conducted in input to the differential stage. So we can say that an operational amplifier with an high CMRR is a device that amplifies the real signal into which we are interested and eliminates the noise source. Another constraint that we need to apply such a solution is that the noise of which the two wires are characterized is stable and constant, and that the two wires are very tightly twisted. This assures us that when we perform the subtraction, basically we are eliminating the same noise that is present into the second wire from the noise that is present on the first wire that brings the signal coming from the transducer. Other constraints that must be taken into account are that the capacitive coupling should depend on the two wires' impedances. That is, it is important that they are as equal as possible to collect the same amount of noise. Moreover, it will be necessary that the amplifier close to the transducer and the transducer itself feature a low output impedance. However, the preamplifier must have a high input impedance. This said, there is a typical stage that is chosen in industrial application for performing the differential amplifying we mentioned before. This stage is called instrumentation amplifier, and it is shown in slide 23, where the specific part of the circuit devoted to the difference made on the two inputs input signals is the network, the mesh, with the resistors R2, R3, and the final operational amplifier. The first stage, featuring two operational amplifiers with the resistor R1 and the potentiometer R lowercase, are introduced in such a circuit just to present the two signals, E1, that is the signal that comes from the transducer, and E2, that is the signal coming from the wire bringing only the noise, to a very high impedance input stage. In other words, if we eliminate the two operational amplifiers at the beginning of the instrumentation amplifier, we will bring the signal coming from the transducer directly to the U1 input point and the noise to the U2 input point. Since we will never sure that the impedance of the two wires is the same, it is not possible to claim that in terms of resistive contributions, these two impedances can be considered equal and therefore added to R2 and R3 and perfectly subtracted by the last operational amplifier. Instead, if we decouple the impedance due to the two wires from the remaining part of the circuit with R2, R3 and even R1, introducing two operational amplifiers whose impedance in input is infinite, we eliminate completely this problem. That means that the impedance due to the wire bringing the signal E1 and the impedance bringing the noise called E2 to such a circuit, even if they are different, will not affect in any case the transfer function, the differential transfer function implemented by such a kind of circuit. And this is a very important property of this instrumentation amplifier. The other property is related to the fact that the common mode rejection ratio of this amplifier is very high. If you look at whatever book of electronics, you will see that the CMRR is defined as the ratio between the differential gain of such a kind of device, of amplifier, divided by the common gain of the circuit itself. The differential gain is the gain that amplifies the difference of the input signals provided to the circuit. And the common gain is instead the gain of the circuit that amplifies the average voltage value of the two input voltages provided to the circuit. In slide 23, some formulas are presented that help us to evaluate the two voltages U1 and U2 in the middle of the mesh of the network as depending on the two input values E1 and E2. And finally, the output voltage U that is given by the difference of U1 minus U2 divided by R2 and multiplied by R3. The final expression of this voltage brings the difference of the two input voltages E1 and E2 to be multiplied by 1 plus 2R1 divided by R lowercase multiplied by R2 and R3 and divided by R2. This is an important expression because shows us that at least ideally we have an amplification of the difference of the two input signals, but we have no common amplification of the average of them. The average would be E1 plus E2 divided by 2. In the formula, we have no terms of such a kind. Theoretically, therefore, we could say that the common mode rejection ratio factor of such a kind of instrumentation amplifier is infinite. In the real life, this is not completely true because the calculation is based on the fact that resistors R1, R2, R3 are equal in both the parts of the amplifier. If you look at the picture, you see that we have two resistors R1, two resistors R2, two resistors R3. It is very important, we could say it is mandatory, that both the resistors that belong to a couple are exactly with the same value, so as to have a perfect difference. And this is cannot true in real life because every time resistors feature some small but present differences. Moreover, the value of a resistor is changing during the life, so we are not sure that the value of the resistor R1 that perhaps is 1 kilo ohm today will be the same after 1 year of activity of the circuit. This means that it is not true that the factor CMRR is infinite, but in any case we can consider it very high. And when I say very high, I mean 10,000 or even more. The last interesting property of the amplifier is that in such a configuration, the gain, the differential gain, is tunable by using only one resistor. That is typically the resistor R lowercase. This is very useful because if we would choose to change the differential gain by modifying R1, R2 or R3 or whatever of them, of course we are obliged to modify both the resistors with the similar values in the two parts of the circuit that go to the minus input and the plus input of the final operational amplifier. Clearly, this is not easy and could be considered a problem. Instead, by using only a potentiometer like the one that is shown in the picture in the network, the modification of the gain is straightforward. The only drawback that we can observe is that the relationship between the gain and the value of R lowercase is not linear, because R lowercase is in the denominator of one of the factors of the gain. Other observations that can be made about this policy for chosen for eliminating the noise are related to the level of accuracy that we need. Clearly, these solutions are acceptable if no great accuracy is required. Otherwise, we should eliminate the noise exploiting the digital conversion, and we will see in the next slides the role of the analog to digital converter. Just to anticipate something, the quantization of the ADC is the tolerance that we choose for the transformation of an analog signal to a digital one. And if the noise is lower than the quantization error introduced by the ADC, clearly we could say that the noise is filtered. On the other hand, we must be careful in the definition of the quantization error, because if the quantization error is too high, okay, we cancel the noise, but the accuracy in the reconstruction of the signal will be very poor. Another consideration must be done relative to the transmission approach that is typically performed through parallel communications or serial communications. The general rule is that parallel communications are very efficient for short distances, I mean a few meters, while serial communications are more suitable for long distances, hundreds of meters or even kilometers. In the serial transmission, data are organized following very diffused and popular protocols. The most known one, especially in industrial applications, are RS-232 and USB, that are characterized by a better noise immunity. In fact, the logic signals 0 and 1 that are transmitted through the serial communication correspond to bands of voltages that typically are larger than those used internally to the CPU. I mean, are larger than a typical TTL or ECL voltage bands. For example, a logic 0 could be a signal that is included in the range 325 volts, and a logic 1 could correspond to a value between minus 3 and minus 25 volts. So it is clear that noise that transforms a 0 into 1 or vice versa must be a real strong noise generated by a very robust source of disturbances that is not typical in industrial applications. The usual values transmitted onto typical serial networks are 12 volts for logic 0 and minus 12 volts for logic 1. So the noise margin is 24 volts, that is enough for many of the possible situations that we can conceive. While in the RS-232 format, the transmission is performed exploiting only a single wire, in its following versions, like for example 422 or 485, the transmission is made exploiting two wires, one bringing the signal and one bringing the noise. So the previous considerations that we made about the possibility of cleaning further the signals by making a difference between the real signal line and the other, let's say, noise line can be repeated also in this case. Of course, we will need voltage converters between the lines that bring the signals and the internal buses onto which the signals travel, but in the logic that is suitable for the CPU, that is 0.5 volts. These devices are typically called line drivers and line receivers and are responsible for the transformation of, for example, a logic 0 that is 12 volts into a logic 0 for the CPU that correspond typically to 0, maximum 1 volt, and of the transformation of a logic 1 that, serially speaking, corresponds to minus 12 volts into a logic 1 for the CPU, typically a voltage close to 4-5 volts. Finally, we have to mention that in case the noise under the signal frequencies bands are different, typical filtering with electronic circuits can be performed. Both analog and even digital filtering can be used in this case. In the slide 25, we see the general interface between a transducer that measures a suitable physical magnitude to which we are interested and the microprocessor. The stages that are between these two devices are a multiplexer, a sample and hold, an analog to digital converter, and the peripheral ports of the microprocessor itself. The multiplexer, indicated in the picture with MPX, it's a device that selects one of the N inputs, bringing it in output toward the sample and hold component. The multiplexer, therefore, is a selector, and in this specific case receives the outputs of the possible many transducers that could be present in a particular industrial application, and selects one of them on the basis of those signals that are indicated with a blue arrow in the picture and called cell, arriving from the output of a microprocessor. The particular relationship between the inputs, better, the number of the inputs, and the selection input of the multiplexer is that if k are the number of the bits of the selecting input in the multiplexer, the number of the inputs will be 2 power k. The second component that we are seeing is the sample and hold circuit. We know that often in a acquisition measurement system, we need to read periodically the signal for two reasons, basically. The first is that we want to reconstruct the behavior of the signal into the microprocessor memory, so as to understand the behavior, particular characteristics as the slope, the maximum value, whatever we can interested to. But we know that the microprocessor works in discrete instant of time, so we have to read, to sample the signal at those instance, storing the corresponding value of the signal in the memory of the microprocessor after converting it into a suitable binary number that is put in correspondence with the voltage of the signal that is sampled. We need a command from the microprocessor to perform such a task, and in the picture is indicated with the magenta arrow. And the other possible need for sampling a signal is due to the fact that the following stage, the ADC, is not enough fast compared to the velocity with which the signal changes in the time. In other words, if the dynamics of the signal is too fast for the conversion of the ADC, we need to freeze the signal at the inputs of the analog to digital converter, and this is done by sampling it and holding it for a certain instant of time, for a certain interval. The analog to digital converter stage is necessary to transform the value of the sampled signal into a suitable binary number that can be read through the ports of the microprocessor. This is, of course, a obliged passage due to the fact that the microprocessor works with binary numbers and doesn't understand at all an analog signal to which it wouldn't be able to assign a certain significance. So, we need to establish a relationship between the voltage in input and the correspondent binary number in output. We will come back later on such an issue, but we need also to establish the moment into which the conversion should take place. This is done by means of the control signal start of conversion that is shown in yellow in the picture. And this signal is issued by the microprocessor again, while the microprocessor will remain waiting the ending of the conversion that will be sent through another control signal shown in green in this case from the ADC, from the analog to digital converter, towards the port itself of the microprocessor. So we have a set of control signals that must be spent by the microprocessor for managing all the stages in the acquisition conversion chain. The particular picture that we have considered is featuring the possibility that the analog to digital conversion takes place, transforming a voltage input signal into a 12 bits binary number. We are making the hypothesis to have two 8 bits ports of the microprocessor. The first is completely devoted to the acquisition of the bits of the ADC. The second one is devoted partially to the ADC output and partially to the control signal that are necessary for the multiplexer, for the sample and hold, and for the ADC and the shake. In particular, the sample and hold signal is made by only one bit. The end of conversion and start of conversion are only two bits, the selection bits of the multiplexer depends clearly on the number of the inputs of the multiplexer itself. For example, if we have 8 inputs, the number of the bits from the microprocessor necessary to select them is 3. When the microprocessor should read the binary number converted by the analog to digital converter? If the ADC is fast, the microprocessor could wait in a polling state for the end of conversion signal. If the ADC is low, the microprocessor will wait for an interrupt signal when the end of conversion will be active. That is, while in the first case the microprocessor will periodically read the port 2 and in particular will try to understand if the EOC signal has changed. In the second case, we must configure properly the port so as when the end of conversion signal is raised up, an interrupt request starts towards the microprocessor. This is done, of course, to avoid to make the microprocessor to lose time in continuously sampling an event that is slow, so it will come not so fast compared to the typical duration of the tasks that the microprocessor must execute. ADC can be fast, can be slow, depending on the particular electronic principle on which they are based. This is not the scope of the course to go into the details about this, but we can anticipate that if the analog to digital converter is based, for example, on the presence of many capacitors whose time of charge is basically the measurement of the voltage signal and is transformed into a binary number. Okay, in this case, the conversion time could be set around 100 milliseconds up to 500 milliseconds. Instead, the fastest converters are those into which the transformation of the voltage input into a binary output number is performed by means of a set of levels determined by suitable resistors networks. In such a case, the conversion is very, very quick, and the conversion time can be in the order of the nanoseconds, sometimes tenth nanoseconds. Typical normal conversion times of the other types of ADCs are in the order of microseconds. When to start the conversion? We have two possibilities, a software approach and a hardware approach. Starting the conversion means to activate the bit of the port 2 in the example shown in the picture that is connected to the start of conversion signal of the ADC. If we do this through a software approach, we need to execute a code whose duration is known to the microprocessor with enough accuracy. The conversion, in fact, must be repeatedly executed with a certain periodicity because all the acquisition of the signals from the multiplexer must be done in a periodic way. At the end of this software routine, the microprocessor will send the signal through the port. If we choose an hardware approach, we need a timer, an hardware timer, that will send an interrupt to the microprocessor when the time interval that has been established expires. In the corresponding interrupt service routine, the microprocessor will activate the bit of the port 2 so as to start the conversion of the ADC. Sometimes the bit itself exiting from the timer is sent not to the microprocessor port but to the start of conversion input signal of the analog to digital converter to trigger the beginning of the conversion. In this case, the microprocessor will not execute any interrupt service routine, but simply will remain waiting for the end of conversion signal that will enable it to read the converted number at the input of the port 1 and partially of the port 2 in the example that we have shown in slide 25.